Hello.
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 Hi, it's Esther.
You need to turn your radio off.
Call it in from California.
I'm in Georgia.
Hey.
Las Vegas.
Woohoo, Vegas.
Germany.
Wow, Germany, how incredible.
Hello, hello. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Fantastic.
Yep. Excellent, excellent. This is Walt Goodridge. Welcome to the call. And for those of you who are not country music fans, that was a famous song from back in 1977 called Take This Job and Shove It by Johnny Paycheck. You can look that up on YouTube. Okay, welcome to the call again. And for those of you who are new, my name is Walt Goodridge. I'm the author of Turn Your Passion into Profit. And tonight's call, or actually daytime someplace, some other places, so this call is entitled Ducks in a Row, Please, How to Find the Courage to Finally Quit Your Soul-Draining, Life-Sapping, Energy-Depleting, Freedom-Robbing Job Now Before It's Too Late and Live Passionately Ever After. So here's what I'd like to do. In our previous call on February 1st, 2013, we went into a few details about turning your passion into profit. And if you are not on that call, you can go to waltgoodridge.com, click on the interviews, and you will see the recording on their conference calls, and you'll be able to catch up on what we discussed in the last conference call. I figure we might be having one of these each month for the next 12 months or so. So in order not to repeat a lot of what was said earlier, I'm going to direct you to that, waltgoodridge.com, and Goodridge is spelled G-O-O-D-R-I-D-G-E, and click on events or click on interviews more accurately, and you'll get the link for that workshop that we did. And on that workshop, I told you my story about how I ended up in engineering, how I got the idea to write my first book based on my passion, based on being in the music industry, how I was able to match my income with the sales of that first book, and eventually how I was able to quit my job. And we sort of ended that call on that note. We answered a few more questions, but we ended that call talking about the concept of actually quitting one's job. So on this call, what I'd like to do is go into that a little in much more detail to actually share with you some of the thoughts, the actual thoughts that were going through my mind that precipitated me actually writing my resignation letter and handing it in to my boss and walking away and being a full-time entrepreneur. Now, before I get started, though, a couple of things that we have to take care of. One is the whole purpose of tonight's call is not just for me to hear my own voice, even though I enjoy doing that, but the purpose of the call is to help you to get to the next stage, next level, whatever that happens to be for you. So I'd like you to make sure that you do something different. If you want to get on the fast track, if you have a goal in life and you want to get on the fast track, the surest, best way for you to move quickly is to run towards your fears. If you think about it, the only way that you can achieve something different is by doing something different. The only way you can do something different is by stepping outside of your comfort zone. if you continually do the things that are within your comfort zone, then obviously you'll just keep getting what you've always been getting. And, you know, there are a lot of trite phrases and proverbs that go along with that. And, you know, one of them, I'm sure you've heard before, says the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And that's exactly what a lot of people do. They do the same thing. They go to the same job. They do everything that their parents did and everyone around them does, but they expect somehow that their results are going to be different. And it's just really common sense that says if you want to do something different, if you want to set yourself apart from what the masses are doing, you have to do something different. So what I'm going to suggest to you is on tonight's call, if you had planned to simply listen in and be an observer, I'm going to challenge you to do something different, because this call will only be of value to you, or let me put it this way, this call will be of optimum value for you if you ask questions, if you make suggestions, if you express a concern, if you do something different. Jump in, participate, because my role is simply to share what I know so that others may grow. So it's more valuable if you participate. So I'm going to challenge you to do something different and actually participate. Right now the lines are open. This is a live call. So if you have any questions, just press a button on your phone and I'll know someone has a question and we can go off in that direction. The next thing is, if at some point in the call I have to mute it because there's noise coming from the participants, then I'll let you know. And at that point, you'll have to press *6 in order to unmute yourself and ask your question. So with that said, let's have some fun. Let's jump into this, share some information. And I'll give, if you are warmed up already and you want to get started with a question, I'll leave the line open for a second for anyone who wants to jump in and get us started. Hey, there we go. All right. Who do I have on the call? You can make up a name if you like and just ask your question.
Well, this is Esther. And my question is, when I read your story, there's a part of your story that says how you started learning about the music industry, and then you started writing books. And then you eventually ended up having enough money, and then you quit. So for those of us who haven't really gotten started yet, is it still a good idea to get a toehold in something, get some experience in something, and then quit?
Okay, excellent question. It really depends. It makes sense for you to have something at least planned out, but here's what I'd like to suggest to you. It may not take as long as you think it does to have a toehold in something before you jump out. So in my case, let me just modify the story that you told a little bit. When I actually quit my job, I was earning enough, meaning the sales of my book were generating enough, but I did not have, quote, enough money to quit my job. I was still, I didn't have any savings because I was putting it all back into business. In fact, I was starting to get late on my rent payments. So when I actually quit, I did not have a nest egg, a cushion, or anything that you might think in terms of a savings. So the fact that I had the sales of the book did give me the a little bit of security knowing that I had something else going on. So I would suggest that, especially if you're new to the whole concept of being an entrepreneur, it might be good to spend a little time developing the thing that you're going to transition into. However, and this is very important, I have to make this point. One of the things that I learned is that even at the point when I had a regular job making $50,000 a year, and I had the sales of my book making about $4,000 a month, I still was not able to quit my job. I could not bring myself to make that leap because the fear was still there. And that's the most important thing that I'd like to suggest to you, is that even if you have, there are people who are making millions of dollars each year who are still living in fear, living in the fear that something is going to go wrong, living in the fear that somehow next month the market is going to crash and they're going to lose it. So the thing you have to work on most is the fear itself, because the having the toehold having some money saved, all of that really, from my experience, will not give you what you really need in order to jump out on your own. It's something else, and that's what we're going to talk about in this call. It's something else you have to really latch on to, and the toehold is not that you need to get is not the business itself, but the toehold in the confidence in yourself, the toehold in the belief that you will make it, the toehold in the commitment that you will make it despite what happens. So you could quit your job tomorrow with nothing else lined up, and in the course of a day, just sit, meditate, think of an idea, and jump into it the next day and act and potentially make enough money right away to start the transition. So it really sort of depends. The only reason I would suggest taking a little time to plan and create something to transition into is because it does usually take some time for someone to unlearn all of the stuff that they've learned as an employee and then to relearn or learn anew what it takes to be an entrepreneur. But the potential flaw in that is if you start to develop the habit of working a 9-to-5 job and running your sideline business at the same time, you will never really learn what it takes to run a business full-time. That, this is from my experience. You will always know you have a fallback. You'll never be fully committed. You won't really know how to budget correctly in order to pay your rent. So though it might seem like a sensible thing to do, you know, keep your day job while you transition, it could also be potentially flawed in that it's not training you how to be a full-time entrepreneur. And that's why when I eventually jumped out on my own, I still had the learning to do, and that's why eventually I went through some ups and downs, got evicted, and had my lights turned off and all that in the process. Now, that's not saying that you have to go through that process, but again, what it takes to be a self-sustaining, full-time passionpreneur is completely different from what it takes to be an employee. And if you structure your life from this moment on, having the two of them running side by side, I don't believe you will ever really give the passion-centered business the real commitment that it deserves. So that was a long-winded answer. Did that make any sense?
No, I think it was a great answer, actually, because
okay.
you touched on a lot of different things, and it depends on what everyone's individual situation is, what they took
right,
from what
right.
It was great. Thank you.
Now, there's another thing that I'd like to suggest to you, that there's a book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. And one of the things that he talks about that I really like, that I'm glad that he mentioned, and now that's why I recommend his book also, is that he calls it your money blueprint. And we've heard stories, you know, when I was involved in network marketing, we've heard stories of people who were working, let's say, a job at $40,000 a year, and then they jumped into their own business and they made $40,000 a year in their business. Or they were a good salesman or saleswoman and in a particular business, and they made $40,000 a year in sales in a particular region. And even when they were sent to a region that had typically lower results, they also were able to make $40,000 a year. So there's something really unique going on. And again, T. Harv Eker calls it your money blueprint. And that's something like a thermostat that is set for you to generate a particular amount of money. So you might find that the reason that you're making X amount of dollars in your current job has less to do with your qualifications, less to do with the market, less to do with the job itself, and more to do with what you feel you are worth. And if and when you actually jump out on your own and do a full-time passionpreneurial pursuit, that sense of value will carry over with you, and you might find that you're making the same X amount of dollars because you intrinsically and inherently value yourself as a $50,000 a year person or, you know, $90,000 a year person, and you will automatically do the things that are necessary to bring that self-concept into your passionpreneurial pursuit as well. So that's a bit of encouragement to let you know that, you know, sometimes the money that we make is doable, is achievable outside of this paradigm called, you know, employment. So that's my answer. All right. Anyone else before I move on a little bit? Okay. So let's see. Now, when I became when I eventually quit my job, the thing that preceded it, I'm going to go into a little more detail now, exactly what happened when I moved from being an employee to being an entrepreneur. I joined a network marketing company. The name of the company was ACN, American Communications Network. And it's a company similar to, it's an MLM company, network marketing company, similar to Amway and Mary Kay and those sorts of companies. If you have a question, just hold on just a minute. And I participated in a training, in their training program. Now, if you've ever been involved in any of those companies, you'll know that part of at least 50% of what they do is train you on the mindset of success. And it was in being part of that network marketing company that I actually gained the courage and the discipline in order to jump out on my own. I'm going to get into some detail on that next. So do we have a question? Okay. So here's what happened. I'm going to go into details. And again, at any point, you can just jump in and ask a question. So I'm part of this network marketing company. We're marketing telecommunication services. We're, you know, at the time marketing long distance service and earning residual income on the people's telephone bills month to month. And as mentioned, it's network marketing, so we're introducing new people to the business, and when they sign up new customers, we also earn a percentage of those customers. And you might be familiar with how multi-level marketing works. So again, part of the training system involved teaching you the mindset that's necessary for success. And a question? So the mindset that's necessary for success, we had a training program on a Sunday. And on that Sunday, we went through personality type training, we went through role playing, we went through sales techniques, a lot of really unique things. And it was at that workshop on a Sunday that something clicked in my mind. And I made the decision to walk away from my job as a civil engineer. So that Sunday, the training started about maybe 10 in the morning, went till maybe 12 noon or 1 in the afternoon. And something that happened, and I thought about this for years afterwards, exactly what it was. You know, in the intervening years, I sort of lost track of exactly what was said, what the moment was, but it was essentially being in a room with people who share the same vision. We all wanted to, you know, quit our jobs or just make more money to help our families or do whatever. But I was in a room of people who all had the same way of thinking. We were all being trained on our strengths and weaknesses and personality types. We were all enrolled in a larger vision of success. And it was something that was said at that workshop that something just came over me. And I remember my business partner and the fellow who had introduced me to ACN, we both looked at each other. You know, he was on the other side of the room. We both looked at each other. He smiled. We both nodded. So I know it affected him at exactly the same time. And I took off from work that Monday, meaning I didn't go into work that Monday, and I wrote my two-line resignation letter to whom it may concern. This is to inform you that as of August 5, 1995, I shall no longer be employed as a civil engineer with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. And then on Tuesday, I walked it into my job, and I handed it in, and I quit, and that was all she wrote. Now, in going through what was going through my mind, and I put a lot of those thoughts in the book, Ducks in a Row. So I'm going to go through just some of those ideas right now, but just speaking off the cuff, it just occurred to me that I had to do something right then and there. A lot of some of the trite phrases, you know, if you keep on doing what you've always been doing, you'll keep on getting what you've always been getting, you know, the definition of insanity, if not now, then when, you know, all of those things, sort of as trite as they sounded, they really struck a chord because they were all, they all made a lot of sense. If I really wanted, I had been a civil engineer for 7 years up until that time. If I really wanted something other than what I was experiencing, I had to do something different. So I knew that this was my opportunity. There was nothing else that was happening that provided an opportunity for me to jump out. There was no other group of people in my life who I had who could offer this support system. So there was no other time that I could point to that could say, okay, no, I won't do it now. I'll do it, you know, 6 months from now. Something clicked, and I realized that if I really wanted to do something, now had to be the time to do it. And I keep stressing that because in the absence of the sort of training that I went through in that leadership training, it might be difficult for people to really appreciate the sense of urgency that they have to bring to this decision, whether it's to quit your job or whether it's to pursue your passion or just do something different. There is a sense of urgency going on here. There's something happening that you may not realize. And in order for you to see this objectively, I'm going to have to step back a little bit and share with you an idea that I'd like you to really, really appreciate. Okay. A lot of what we're doing here, you know, you're born into a society and, you know, it's like you're born into this herd of lemmings running, you know, off in a direction, and you land, you know, and everyone is running, so you have to start running too, and you just get caught up in this mindset, in this paradigm of moving from one goal to the next, and then you do what everyone else is doing, you know, when they turn 20, and then you do what everyone else is doing when they turn 30, and a lot of people never stopped to ask, you know, why am I doing this? Does this make any sense? What is this all about? And this is what I'm going to suggest to you is happening. We are all sort of caught up in this paradigm, and it all seems to make sense. It all seems, you know, all laid out, and everyone else has done it. But it's really a very unnatural system, an unnatural paradigm. We're all forced to do things that are really unnatural in order to survive. Now let's take a step back. You know, the only two things that are of any importance in life are, you know, a place to exist and the time to do as you please. And I go into that a little bit further in the book, but I want to talk about it a little bit now. The only two, if we were living in a paradigm, in a society, you know, without the concrete, without the tall buildings, the unusual living situation of being piled up on top of each other, the only thing that would be of any importance is a place to exist. That's you show up on the planet, you land somewhere, all you really need is a place to call your own and the time to do as you please. So you have this plot of land, it's yours. You know, if you think back thousands of years, you know, no one was paying rent. You know, the Indians weren't paying rent for the land, you know, here in the United States. No one had to do a particular thing, give up their time in order to earn the right to live on a plot of land. The land belonged to everyone. You planted your corn, you grew it, you know. So the most important thing, just a place to exist, that is already taken care of in a more natural paradigm. And then the time to do as you please. So, you know, once you have your shelter and your food taken care of, the next thing is, you know, you got to decide what you do, whether it's, you know, hunting or whether it's making music or, you know, but you have the time to do as you please, you know, raise children, whatever it is. Anything other than that, right? You have a place to call your own. You have shelter from the elements. You have your food growing. Anything other than that construct, that natural construct, anything other than that is really an aberration, an unnatural way of living. Once you move away from that, you know, again, this requires that you really step back objectively to look at all of the stuff that we're doing, all of the iPhones and the computers and this, you know, the pursuit of this car or that, all of that stuff that we've been told to, we've been led to believe are necessary for our existence is not really. In the final analysis, when you really break things down, distill it to its basic element, the only thing you really need is a place to call your own. But once you move away from that natural construct, then you are forced to do very unnatural things in order to sustain it. So all of us have moved away from that plot of land. We're no longer, you know, roaming the plains of the U.S. We now have all moved to these aberrant constructs called cities where, wait a minute, there's no land. There's no place for us to grow our own food to survive. So we've already separated ourselves from the natural environment. So now we have to do something really unnatural in order to sustain it. So because we can't grow our own food, we have to pay someone for our food. Because we don't own our own land in order, you know, to live free of charge, we now have to pay someone. We have to buy into a system that's based on money and pay someone in order to have the right to exist. You know, there's this old joke that human beings are the only beings on planets who have to pay for a place, you know, to remain on the planet. You have to, if you're not out in the wilderness somewhere, you have to pay somebody for the right to exist. You have to pay for someone to provide a place to shelter. But that's only because the system that we're living in is really an unnatural system. So now you've bought into this, you're in this unnatural system, you now are totally disconnected from the natural world, that you cannot survive unless you buy into the system. So in order to buy into the system, now you have to sell your time, now you have to go to school to learn a particular skill in order to work in a factory, and now you have to ride subways, and now you have to pay. So all of this thing, this stuff that we call society, that we call, you know, civilization, is all an unnatural construct that is, that we're forced to buy into in order to survive. Now, I'm going to suggest to you that if you look at what it is we're doing in that way, you can start to see the folly of it, you can start to see the fallacy of it, you start to ask yourself, what on earth am I doing devoting so much time and energy to something that is so unnatural? And that might help you to be able to find the courage to be able to distance yourself, to see the silliness of it in order to see it objectively enough for you to try something different, to do something different. Now, obviously, you know, the system is all pervasive. The paradigm exists a lot of different places. Unless you run up into the mountains somewhere in the wilderness and, you know, set up a tent and live off the land, which, you know, people are doing, you have to buy into it to some degree. Even, you know, becoming a passionpreneur and pursuing your passion requires that you still participate in the system, because you need money in order to do that. You need money in order to give yourself a certain amount of freedom, unless you're actually going to leave and go find some land somewhere that's that you can capture and then grow your own. There is some amount of participation in the system that is required. However, I'm suggesting to you that you don't have to do it blindly and just get caught up in it and not see it for what it is. And the more you can see it for what it is, the more you can make decisions based on separating, on participating to the degree that you want to participate, rather than simply being caught up into it blindly. And then at the end of your life, you realize that, you know, it's been all a farce and you've been focusing on the wrong thing. So that's something I'd like to suggest to you, that part of what I started to see at that leadership training was that I was caught up in something that really didn't make any sense. I was caught up in something that was not fulfilling. I was caught up in something that didn't have to be that way. You know, especially having come from another country. I was born in Jamaica. I grew up there for a while. I'm realizing that there was a different reality. Obviously, yes, still a materialistic, capitalistic system, but still but a little more connected to a natural environment. So I was just being aware that a different reality exists. And, you know, you don't have to be foreign-born in order to see that. Even if you just grew up, you know, in the South here in the United States, or even traveled, you can realize that there is a different reality that you can experience and that exists and that you can create for yourself. So I hadn't intended to be that long-winded about that idea, but that is part of what happened in my mind. I just realized, you know, I really need to get out of this. I'm stuck in a job. I've been here for 7 years. I don't like what I'm doing. It's not fulfilling. It's not my passion. It's not what I would do if I could construct my ideal life, and I need to get out. I need to do this. I need to do something really radical. I need to do something really different in order to chart a different course, because if I don't, I'll end up like everybody else and, you know, dependent on the federal government or friends and family for their survival and their sustenance. I'll end up that, you know, there was a study done recently, I think in Australia or the UK, I'm not sure, and they talked to individuals who were in the final stages of their time here on Earth, and, you know, the number one regret that people have looking back is that they simply worked too hard and were focused so much on getting ahead and so much on working that they missed out on all of the really important things in life. And you've heard that before. However, you know, if you really take the time to step back objectively and look at what it is that you're valuing, what it is you're pursuing, you will realize, and hopefully you can learn from other people's experiences rather than having to go through it yourself, that this whole focus on materialism, the whole focus on working, on getting ahead in the job, and, you know, sacrificing your family and your friends and your relationships for the pursuit of, you know, a 3% raise and putting your job ahead of your personal happiness and putting other people's happiness in, ahead of yours, really doesn't pay off in the long run. And a lot of people have realized that and wish that they would. The number one regret that they have is that they wish they hadn't worked so hard. And two is that they wish they were just truer to themselves, truer to what it is they really wanted to do. So on that note, that's some of what was going through my mind when I was making the decision to quit my job. And I'll just take a little breath here and ask if anyone else has any questions. Now, hold on just a minute. Okay, so some of the reasons, in the book, Ducks in a Row, I go into some of the reasons why you need to start thinking seriously about quitting your job. And let me just say here that as Esther, the young lady who spoke earlier, was nice enough to review the book after she read it, and she said something really significant in that, you know, the workshop is entitled, tonight's workshop is entitled How to Quit Your Job. However, the concept that of making new choices, adopting a new belief system is applicable to just about anything. It doesn't have to be, you know, the job thing is a metaphor for any situation that you feel might be holding your back, whether it's the expectations of family, whether it's a relationship that you're in, whether, you know, it's just a circle of friends that you're moving in, or whether it's a job that's not fulfilling for you. This whole concept of breaking free and doing something different is, and the information is something that you can apply to any one of those situations. So one of the things that I get into to share with you the idea of why you must quit your job is because the number one reason is you really can't raise your standard of living working a job. That's one of the reasons. We've been led to believe that, you know, if you go to school, that you get a good job, if you continue doing what everyone else is doing, that things will get better and you'll suddenly break into this magical thing called the American dream, if you're here in America, and things will be all right. But it is practically impossible for you to raise your standard of living working a job. And that's simply because as much as your employer might want to, they really can't pay you what you're worth. The whole construct of capitalism is based on maximizing profit. So that all that pushes prices up and it pushes expenses down. That's the only way you can do it. So that's why a lot of big companies are always looking to keep the wages at a certain minimum, certain maximum, so that they don't have to pay over a certain amount because that'll cut into profit. So you can get 3% raise here, 2% raise next year, but you can't really improve your standard of living working a job. Now, there are people who do it, different professions, let's say, but I was talking to a friend the other day who is doing home care at a nursing elderly care at a nursing home, and a lot of the people who she's dealing with were former doctors and lawyers who are now, you know, living, having to be taken care of, you know, at a nursing home. Now, you would think that individuals who, you know, in our society we look up to and say, okay, this is someone who is doing well, this is someone who has succeeded, this is someone who has done well, that that success would translate into later years where they're not just as confined and as restricted as other people who are, you know, conceivably lower on the totem pole. So as much as we have bought into this concept of pursuing the next cost of living adjustment or the next raise or the next promotion, the things are structured in such a way that you'll never really improve your standards of living. So that's number one. Number two, I mentioned before a friend of mine who has a website called happierabroad.com, you know, a fellow named Winston, who wrote an article a couple of months ago and asked a very poignant question. If you spend all of your time working for a living, when do you actually get the time to do what you're supposedly working for? You know, we have this idea, this ideal called, you know, I'm working for a living. So, yes, you do the work. You work 8 hours a day. You work five, six, seven days a week, and you work 12 months out of the year, 10 months out of the year, 11 months, and you get 2 weeks vacation after a whole year of work. So you work 50 weeks out of the year. You get 2 weeks vacation. You know, if you really looked at this objectively, that is not living. So, you know, that's why a lot of people squeeze all of their living into weekends, you know, and go overboard and binging, and, you know, they have a 2 week. That is not, you know, living. That is, so the answer to Winston's question, you know, there's more to living than simply working for a living. So one of the things that I suggest to people is not to get so caught up in the paradigm that you forget the fact that you are here, not to simply work 50 weeks out of the year, not to make someone else wealthy, but to carve out a life for yourself, however you define it. And if you are able to step outside of the employment paradigm, that takes you just one step closer to carving out a sort of life that is defined more by pursuing your passion, doing things that fulfill your purpose, that give you a sense of fulfillment, rather than simply making somebody else rich. If anyone has any questions, just feel free to jump in and start talking.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How you doing, Walt? This is Dylan Raymond, and I'm in Houston, Texas, and I too was a part of ACN.
But
I do have a question. You know, when you go, you know, you have this false security of a job, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever it is, eight hours a day. You know, you got the benefits, you got a certain salary. What is it that kept you in the game when you transitioned? Because if you're going from a regular job into entrepreneur, you know, your salary may not necessarily be the same, but to also, you may even have to work twice as hard as mm-hmm. you did working for an actual employer. But what was it, or what is it that would keep you in a game or keep you in the mindset to go through evictions and lights off and seeing beyond, you know, not reverting back to that comfortability?
Right, right. Oh, thank you so much for that question, Dallin. Fear is the answer to your question. I know this. I thought about this. The thing that kept me going, you may not understand exactly how unhappy I was as a civil engineer. I felt like a piece of my soul was being cut out and stamped on and burned and destroyed each day of my life. Each day I went in there, I felt like I was dying. Like I said in my book, I felt like a piece of my soul was dying. I never wanted to return to that. I made a decision that this was not something how I wanted to define my life. I also have a fear of mediocrity. I don't know where that came from, but, you know, part of it, I looked at where I would end up. When I first started my job as a civil engineer at Corporate America, I looked at some of the people who were working there, and this is not to disparage any of them, but a lot of them seemed beaten. A lot of them, you know, were just going from day to day, just doing, you know, just enough to keep their jobs, and they weren't really happy. They weren't really they were very frustrated. They were complaining all about this or complaining about that, and they didn't have the freedom. So I looked at what my future held, and it held, and it scared me to the core. I did not want to see myself end up there. Now, as to why looking at that prospect is scary for me and maybe not scary for other people take a certain amount of comfort from that, you know, and I'm aware of it. Some people look at that and they say, wow, that's a really comfortable job. If I can just coast along in that job for the next 40 years, I'll be great. I'll retire with a pension. Yes, this is what I want. But when I saw that, just because I had something inside of me that wanted to do more, that felt that it needed to be expressed, that vision of the future scared the heck out of me, and I did not want to see myself go back there. So when I quit my job, and then went through the ups and downs, went through the three separate evictions, went through having my lights turned off, went through, you know, ducking landlords, went through not answering telephones because it was a bill collector, went through sleeping on my friends' couches, you know, because I didn't have a place to stay, temp assignments that I did when I lived in Maryland. At no point did I ever contemplate going back to civil engineering or working in corporate America. Yes, I did some temp assignments in order to pay the rent at some point, but I took the temp assignments because I didn't want to do anything permanent. I didn't want to get a, quote, permanent job. So that's what kept me in the game, just the fear of looking back. I realized that the regret of looking back at my life years from now and seeing that all I accomplished in my mind, that the only thing I was able to accomplish was to work for somebody else, that somehow this dream of freedom wasn't able to manifest, that scared me so much that I was committed to keep doing everything I needed to do in order to write a different story for my life other than the one that was already being written. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what motivated me, just the fear of looking back at some point at some point maybe some grandkid or, you know, comes up and say, hey, Grandpa Walter, you know, why didn't you ever make anything of yourself? Well, because I was too scared to quit my job, you know. So I'd never want to be able to look back and not have tried. And, you know, and that's what kept me in the game.
Thank you.
And I'll mention this just because I have a lot of respect and a lot of love for you. As Dallin mentioned, Dallin, who just asked that question, was one of the individuals who was part of the team that I was in the network marketing company that I mentioned. And, it's people like him who actually taught me the sort of mindset of success and helping others, and you know, always looking on the positive side of life in order to succeed. So that's actually one of my mentors who just asked that question. Thanks a lot, Dallin.
Welcome.
Okay, great. So it's actually 8:45. If anyone has a question, just jump right in.
Hi, this is Esther again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When your this last discussion really, really spoke to my soul, because I spend a lot of time reading autobiographies and biographies of very successful people. And one of the things that I've noticed is that many times there's this clarity of something that somebody wants. For example, when I think about Tyler Perry and what he's achieved now, he started off with a very, very simple goal, which was to do a stage play. But it was really, really clear that that's what he wanted. And then, so it's like, that's what I am working on, because I have a tendency to start with one thing and then get distracted and head into another direction. So many times I've seen successful entrepreneurs, they start with something and they take it to fruition before they jump off and work on the next project. But many times newbie entrepreneurs, we can be very ADD in what we're trying to do. So even if we jump out there and quit our jobs and we start working, we're spinning in circles, we're going in 50 billion different directions, and then we end up in failure, we're sad, and we go back to work and say, oh, it didn't work. So there's something about getting clarity on a particular calling or a product or a service that is so large. And then we have a huge enough why for why we want to do it, and then we manage to stick through it until we come to fruition before we go to something else. So that has been one of my major issues.
Yeah. The only thing that comes to mind to suggest to you is, you know, that sense of clarity, that idea of what it is you're here to do can't really come from the outside. I mean, a catalyst can come from the outside. A spark can come from the outside. Maybe seeing someone else doing something and that, you know, lights a fire in you, and you say, yes, that's what it is that I want to do. I have a friend who's a pilot, and something just clicked in his mind when he saw, you know, a pilot when he was at an airport at a young age, and he realized, yes, something just spoke to him that is what he wanted to do. And he eventually became a pilot, and, you know, and that's what he's doing now. One thing that I might suggest is, you know, I talk about finding your purpose. If you're clear on why it is you're here, it might help you to maintain it might help you to isolate an activity to pursue with a little bit more precision if you're clear on why it is you're actually here. And then that may help, you know, you to maintain the commitment long enough to bring it to fruition. But at the same time, I don't want to suggest that you have to bring something to fruition, because sometimes the process that you go through in going from one thing to the next serves the purpose of eventually getting you to that place. So you may not like the fact that you got distracted from project A and then are now on project B, but that may not be the failure that you think it is. The path may be a little bit longer eventually, but it may be part of the process that you need to get to if you're clear about the underlying purpose behind what it is you're doing. Okay, so for example, when I started my record label, I thought that this was the thing that would take me to free me. You know, I had been involved in the music industry, and I thought, okay, start a record label, we're going to sell records, and that's going to make me, you know, the $1 million, and then I'll get to where I want to get to. It turned out that I didn't bring that, we created product, but I didn't bring that to the ultimate goal, that end point that I wanted to, because in the interim, what happened was, well, first of all, it wasn't exactly the fulfilling my purpose. What I know now is that my purpose was more along the lines of teaching and sharing information. So the record label came and I had a certain amount of success, but it didn't pan out exactly the way I wanted to. But all of the stuff that I learned running that record label was what I put into the book. Once my purpose became clearer to me that it was more about teaching and sharing information, that manifested itself into a book, which then, being more in alignment with my true purpose, is what was the thing that actually helped me match my engineering income and helped pave the way for me to actually quit my job. So respect, there, you have to have a certain amount of respect for the process, the discovery process, as you figure out what it is you're really here to do. One of the reasons why you may not be bringing the projects to completion and to fruition might have to be simply that they're not aligned precisely with the purpose that you're here on the planet to fulfill. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Right. So keep at it. If you want, you can send me an email to walt@passionprofit.com and just maybe itemize some of the projects that you're working on. But I would suggest to you that more time spent on what it is you're really here to do. Why am I really here? What is the thing that I'm here to teach others? Is this project that I've chosen something that really is fulfilling that purpose, or is it just something that excites me in the short term and that's something that I'd like to see done? But is it really the thing that I'm here to do? Is it the thing that I have been blessed with the talent to share? Is it the unique perspective that I have that no one else has? Is it the gift that I've been given? Is it the experience that I'm really here to share with people? What is my true purpose? And the more you can start to isolate that, the more the projects that you do will either align with or detract from, and you'll be able to make better decisions. Because sometimes it's about the decision. And a good idea comes up, but you realize, you know, it's not really... You know, I've passed up a lot of good ideas because when, you know, someone has a good idea to start a, you know, movie theater down the block. Okay, that's a great idea, but that's not in alignment with my purpose. It's something that could make a lot of money. It's something that, you know, we could do well. But I'm clear that my purpose is X, and this thing, as good as it is not really along those lines. So, no, I'm going to stick to the thing that I feel more passionate about and the thing that gives me greater fulfillment. You know, so give it some more time, but also don't pursue it with as much enthusiasm as you can, but don't invest your expectations in that thing so much as seeing where and how it can fulfill your ultimate purpose, not whether it not whether it's a good idea, whether it's profitable, whether it's timely, whether it's, you know, hitting the market at the right time, but is this the thing that is the manifestation of what I'm here to do?
Thank you.
No problem. All right. So I like to be a man of my word, and I promised a 45-minute call, and now we're at 53 minutes, so I've broken my word. But I want to give just a final opportunity for anyone to ask or suggest or express some concern that they have before we wrap up the call. And I'm going to suggest, here's what I'll do. There were a few emails sent in before the call, so I just wanted to address two of them now. One was from a young lady named Jassiana who said, well, I already left my job, took early retirement December of 2012, have a very small pension, I'm happier than ever, I'm able to handle things for mom and take her to doctor's appointments, etc. Would love to combine music and motivational talks. I'm a gifted pianist. I enjoy learning about the internet. That's Jassiana. And then the next one was from Natosha who said, I actually love what I do now. I started a small tutoring service for elementary school children, starting with the children available to me at my son's school. How can I maximize my income source and not be a slave to having it to work it in order to get paid? I love the kids and love parents, but I want to travel and explore the world on my own terms. So both of those people, what I would suggest is, if I were coaching them directly, one of the things that I would want to ask them is, or suggest that they do, is to find out the specific thing that they do that's a little bit different. Now, Jassiana mentioned that she wanted to combine her piano playing and motivational talks, which I think is a cool thing. I'm not sure if anyone else is doing that, but I can picture her on stage, you know, giving motivational talks, sitting at a piano and combining her music and her interpretation of certain ideas and giving motivational talks at that point. And with the coacher who has the idea for a specific type of tutoring for kids, one of the things that I would suggest for her is a book called The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. Very, very powerful book. A few years ago when I did an interview for Entrepreneur Magazine, I interviewed a couple million-dollar passionpreneurs, people who followed their passions and were able to grow companies of $1 million or more. And every single one of them recommended the book The E-Myth by Michael Gerber as a way of helping them structure their business so that they're not tied to their business and end up giving up the freedom that they wanted the business to provide to them. So it's a very good book for Natasha if she wants to see how best to structure a business that's based on an idea, a service business that's based on an idea, in such a way that she can essentially franchise the idea so that she doesn't have to be the sole person working that idea. So that's the short answer that I can suggest to her. And then back to Jassiana, one of the things that I would suggest to her is my own book, Turn Your Passion into Profit, where she can get an idea of how to combine that motivation and that piano playing in a particular way that helps her fulfill her purpose. Because one of the things that we want to make sure that we do when you are constructing a passion-centered business is that you construct it in such a way that it does help you fulfill your purpose, whether you are a creator, a savior, a guru, or a guide. Because just because you are good at piano playing may not necessarily mean that you want to be the focus on the creative aspect of it. Maybe you want to focus on the teaching aspect of it or the healing aspect of it through, you know, healing through sound or something. So there are different aspects to how you may interpret and express your passion so that it's more in alignment with your purpose. So on that note, I'll just end by saying if you would like to, I just updated one of my websites, liferhymes.com, which is motivational poems that I've written over the last couple of years that were all done during the time when I was making the transition from being an entrepreneur to being a passionpreneur. And a lot of the thoughts that were going through our mind, a lot of the things that I had to keep telling myself in order to sustain that energy and that commitment are freely available at liferhymes.com. And
can you spell that, Walt, please?
Right, life as in L-I-F-E, L-I-F as in Frank E, and then rhymes, R-H Y-M-E-S, Life Rhymes. All right, and so on that note, I would like to thank everyone for listening into this call. The next one will probably be in April, maybe early April, and I'd love you to tell your friends about it next time so we can increase the membership. Take a look at waltgoodrich.com. for any other books that are available, any workshops coming up, and have a great night or a great day wherever you are, and thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Walt.
Hi.